Got any plans to go back to the gym or maybe a movie theater or a museum? Well, as of yesterday, all three can open, except in Boston and Somerville, where it will be another week. Phase 3 guidelines place restrictions, though, on capacity, social distancing. For example, movie theaters, they max out at 25 people per screen, and exercising without a mask requires 14 feet of physical distance between gym goers. So what is the trade-off in risk and in reward for both businesses and customers? We start today by checking in with several local businesses who are navigating Phase 3 and with you. Are you going back to the gym or looking forward to taking in a museum exhibit? Is the big screen calling you after streaming on your laptop for the last 3 months? Do you feel comfortable returning to these spaces? And how are you balancing the risks against the rewards? Call us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, let's turn first to a gym that is actually opening today. Joining us now is Matthew Harrington. He's president of Gymit, with locations in Brookline and Watertown. Matthew, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So are you excited to reopen today?
I think that's an understatement. We've been waiting a long time, as the other Phase 3 businesses have been, to reopen, and we're glad that the time has finally come.
So do you think folks are going to come back to the gym, Matt? I wonder, I do find myself thinking, will they opt for more private ways of exercising that maybe they've sort of built a routine with, or maybe private personal trainer sessions? Or do you think people are hungry to get back into that communal gym space?
We're seeing overwhelming amounts of people wanting to come back and sign up for the first time. And we're pretty encouraged by the response so far. The members that have come in today, a lot of our longtime members who we appreciate sticking with us for so long, are thrilled to be back here, and they're excited to see all the changes we've made to make sure that it is a safe place to be back. Additionally, we're seeing a lot of new interest from the neighborhood as well. So that's very positive.
Help us visualize this. What does a reopened Gymit look like for your members? What should people expect when they walk into a gym now?
Well, the big differences are the things that you don't necessarily see. So we've made big investments at all of our facilities in upgrading our cleaning and disinfecting capabilities. We've added a lot of social distancing, spacing, directional signage. One of the big changes you'll notice is that a lot of the equipment we've had to take out of service to adhere to the distancing guidelines. And then also, as far as coming in, because there's not as much equipment as there was before, we are requiring reservations, and that's twofold. One, to adhere with capacity restrictions, but also we want to make sure that you have a good experience when you come back and you're not feeling overcrowded and there is equipment available for you to use. And we're taking
a 15-minute
break.
Yep.
Oh, go ahead.
So let me just clarify on that one, Matt. I think probably regular gym goers might be accustomed to making appointments or reservations, for example, for high demand group fitness classes. But you're saying if you just want to come in and you know, lift weights or use Nautilus machines, for example, you actually have to make a reservation to come in and do that?
Exactly. And this is, you know, one, to adhere to the state guidelines, but we also think that if we didn't have this right now at our normal peak demand times, we would see a bit of overcrowding, which, you know, to us, we're not necessarily comfortable with. And also, we want to make sure everyone is able to get a good workout in and is not not waiting. So we require a reservation to come in to ensure that we have everything you need.
So let's talk about those state guidelines, because you really couldn't be at a normal peak time of day right now, right? The state guidelines, 40% of the facility's maximum permitted occupancy, 8 people per 1,000 square feet. Exercise equipment has to be 14 feet apart or have a plastic barrier if it's 6 feet apart. How are you, face coverings, how are you feeling about and experiencing these rules?
Well, we're just happy to be open with restrictions. It is challenging for us as there's a lot of contradictory rules in the guidelines. Some of the rules that you've just mentioned, there's some contradictions. We're hoping for some clarification, but in the meantime, we're just taking a conservative approach to how we're interpreting them. And also, since we've been out of practice for a little for a few months now, it's going to take us a little while to ramp up. So having a little bit less capacity right now is going to allow us to be better.
So listeners, how are you feeling about the phase three reopening? Are these businesses you're planning to come back to? Have you been hungry for this next phase? Are you worried about being in physical spaces where people are either sitting closer together than they would be or being indoors or exercising? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tell us which business you're most looking forward to going back to now that phase three is here. Matt, working out at the gym, heavy lifting, cardio sessions, there's a lot of breathing, perspiring, exertion. Are you concerned about your safety, the safety of your workers, and how are you managing that?
Well, we're definitely concerned. I think if you were in this world right now and you weren't concerned about these things, that'd be another story. But I think all the precautions we're taking, we're disinfecting the club in between every single reservation block. We're shutting down the club for an hour midday every day for disinfecting and deep cleaning. We have dedicated hours for high-risk members. And then as far as airflow goes, we've opened up our HVAC to the maximum allowable outside air intake. And additionally, our facilities are designed to accommodate 4 to 5 times the amount of members we're allowed to have in right now. So they're already designed to handle a lot more air turnovers than the capacity we're currently allowed to have.
Now let's grab a quick call, 1-800-423-8255 to join the conversation. We've got Rachel on the line from Somerville. Rachel, go ahead.
Hi there. I just want to put a word out there in favor of yoga studios opening up. I know they're technically allowed to, but I really haven't heard much about them opening up. I've been checking their websites a lot.
All right. Thanks for that, Rachel. And let me turn that back to you, Matt, and sort of ask you a two-part question. We know not everybody's going to reopen just because they can. Some businesses do wait as these new phases come along. How long do you think before the industry is kind of reopened? And can the industry withstand the financial pressures that have come with having been closed so long and with the restrictions on capacity that you're experiencing now?
Well, it's going to be a challenge. And if you've been paying attention to the news, a lot of national chains have filed for bankruptcy. There's a lot of our local competitors that have announced they're permanently closed. In terms of yoga studios, and we really feel for our friends that operate studios, but the capacity restrictions, in my mind, make it nearly impossible for a small independent studio to operate, and it's going to be a challenge for the studios, and it's a real challenge for us if we can't bring back the a little bit more capacity. But our goal is to make sure that everyone feels safe coming back, and that's where we're focused is making this an environment that people are encouraged to come back. And we believe that people exercising through this are going to be better off. And we encourage a healthy lifestyle.
All right. That's Matthew Harrington, president of Gymit. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And listeners, keep calling 1-800-423-8255 with your questions, your thoughts, your shout outs on the businesses that are now opening in phase three, beginning yesterday in the Commonwealth and beginning next week for Boston and Somerville. Let's turn now to movie theaters, which join outdoor theater and performance venues in being able to open during part one of phase three, which we're in now. Joining us now are two local movie theater leaders. We have Ivy Moylan as the executive director of the Brattle Film Foundation, which runs the Brattle Theater in Harvard Square. Ivy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Catherine Tallman, the executive director and CEO of the Coolidge Corner Theater in Brookline. Catherine, welcome to you too.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So Ivy, Catherine, I know neither the Brattle nor the Coolidge is reopening this week. Let's talk about when they will reopen and what it'll look like. Ivy, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, sure. We honestly didn't expect that the announcement was going to be, and now you can open for phase three. So we were sort of anticipating that the date would be later. And we're working towards an opening date at the end of July, beginning of August. So we're sticking with that for the time being. Like Matt, we also have some clarification with the guidelines that we need to get to before we can really fully know if we're able to financially reopen, about capacity and whether food service means concessions or not is the big question for all of us. But that's what we're aiming for. And so in terms of the announcement, the date hasn't changed, and we're just trying to adapt to what the guidelines say.
And Ivy, just so listeners know, according to what we do know from the guidelines in part one, or step one of phase three, outdoor venues are able to sell food and concessions. But that's the part that's clear right now in the guidelines. Catherine, how about you? What do we know about when the Coolidge Corner Theater is thinking about reopening, and what's that going to look like?
Well, I would say the answer to that question is a moving target. We had been gearing toward an opening by the end of July. And we were basing our guidelines and our, compliance protocols, social distancing, et cetera, on the guidelines that we had seen so far, 6 feet apart, even with 40% capacity, maybe 25% capacity. We were gearing toward 25% capacity. We were grateful to get some definitive guidelines on Friday, and we're very grateful for the overall management by the administration, but we were quite surprised to find out that we can really only have 7% of our total capacity given the 25 person per venue limitation. So that's
so 25 people in the room would only be 7% of your capacity.
Well,
Catherine,
we have 720 seats altogether. So we have four theaters. One is, and I think this is part of the issue of the cap, is that one of our theaters holds 440 people, and the other one, which we had been planning to use, holds 220 people. So putting 25 people in each one of those is very different than putting 25 people in a smaller venue.
Listeners, are you going to go back to the theater? Are you hungering for a big screen experience? And if you are missing your movie fix, is there something that you want to let Ivy and Catherine know? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Ivy, can you talk a little bit about what it's going to look like and feel like in the theater when you do reopen? I'm thinking about things like cleaning and hand disinfectant, mm-hmm, and crowd management, flow of people, those kinds of things.
So what our plan is, is to have reserved seats and do only online ticket sales so that there's no need for a box office. When we're able to order concessions, being able to also do that in advance, like you do for takeout at restaurants. Having the line start outside the theater with 6 foot indicators, and then letting each party in individually to scan their ticket and then go up into the theater and find their seats. A lot of the changes that are done are invisible to the audience, but our hope is to make the experience as fun and enjoyable as possible while also safe. The staff will be masked. Some will be wearing face shields. Others will be wearing gloves as needed. And the other big thing that will be changing is the exiting will be by row, so to reduce contact there as well.
Catherine, you know, you were talking earlier about sort of percentage of your space that you can, that this 25 people in a room allows for, whether or not that's profitable. We've been hearing all along in this pandemic about the concern of small businesses being able to survive versus big businesses. Would you say that these guidelines, as they've come out, favor the big box theaters, the the Showcase Cinemas or the AMCs of the world? And if so, given that you're already competing in a tough business environment, what does that mean for smaller independent theaters like yours?
It's hard for me to say that the guidelines favor the bigger chains. I know one chain, AMC, had already said they wouldn't open until the end of July. They do have the advantage of multiple screens at smaller numbers, so they can get a total number higher in. But I think Ivy would agree that we don't necessarily consider those big chains competition. We have very different curated product. We have different communities. We're nonprofit. We're mission driven. It doesn't mean that we don't have to pay the bills, but we operate in a different world, both in terms of product and the customers that we generally see.
I want to ask you both a similar question to what I asked Matthew Harrington of Jimmit just a couple of minutes ago, which is there an existential threat to here, viewing habits, just like exercise habits, had time to change when we were really shut down? For example, this past weekend, we saw that the film version of the Broadway show Hamilton premiered on Disney Plus, driving the Disney app download up 74% higher than in the previous week. That originally would have gone to movie theaters. And we are seeing people streaming now. There are more out there, Netflix, Hulu. What will impact will this kind of home viewing habit people have developed had on going to the movies, and how do you counter that now?
This is Ivy. I actually feel like this may have diminished the competition of online streaming and demand, because the alternative experience was withdrawn. What we've heard from our supporters and community and members is that they really want the experience of seeing a film with a group of people other than just themselves and their roommates. So I think it's going to feel really special. Whether that's sustainable is a completely different question. And also, as Kathy was saying, for us as nonprofits, as community organizations, as much as movie theaters, our role in the community is really different. And the commitment that the community has to us remaining, I feel, is different as well. I feel like our audience will be coming back or sending in donations, becoming members to help us try to survive this. Not that the existential threat is not there, but it's more about not being open, not about viewing habits, I feel like.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I think that
Kevin, I was going to ask you that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The death of the film going industry has been talked about forever since the introduction of talkies and videotapes and digital and streaming. And we've only seen a lot of growth over the past many years. The theater did almost go down 30 years ago and was saved by the community. And we celebrated that 30th anniversary just last year. I think there will always be an appetite, a great appetite for people to want to gather in a communal space and share, whether it's a film or a concert. There's just something that's incomparable to sharing things with other people, whether you know them or not. It's just not the same. You could always like a concert. You could always put in a CD. Why would you go to Symphony Hall? There's no comparison with a movie at home or a movie on a big screen.
And that's Catherine Tallman, the executive director and CEO of the Coolidge Corner Theater in Brookline. Thanks for joining us. And Ivy Moylan, executive director of the Brattle Film Foundation, which runs the Brattle Theater in Harvard Square. Ivy, thanks to you too.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right, let's turn to cultural spaces now, including museums, which are also allowed to open in this phase. What museum are you missing? What exhibit were you thinking of going to before things shut down that you might want to go to now? What spaces of art and curation are you most hungering to see again? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, in the Berkshires, Mass MoCA, the Norman Rockwell Museum, and the Clark Art Institute have each announced programming changes and reopening dates later in July. In Boston, no official word yet from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, the Museum of Fine Arts, the Institute of Contemporary Art, although again, Phase 3 doesn't officially start in Boston until next week. But in Salem, the Peabody Essex Museum has announced plans for reopening on July 18th. Brian Kennedy, the director and CEO of the Peabody Essex Museum, joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston, Brian.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you.
So July 18th, that's not long from now. The 16th and 17th are preview days. What will be different about the Peabody Essex Museum when it reopens?
Well, I suppose the most obvious difference, when people come in, we'll all be wearing masks, and so will they. So, you know, we've got a great reputation for being friendly, and we want to welcome everybody. We'll just have to do it in a masked environment. So it's kind of a little bit like Halloween come early. I suppose that's going to be a big difference. But practically speaking, as you've heard from the others, we'll be complying with all of the guidelines, and there are detailed guidelines for museums, but basically concentrating on the safety of our staff and of our visitors.
And what will be different? And let me ask it this way. What's the biggest change? What will people miss when the museum reopens?
Well, I suppose people come to museums, well, 90-something percent of them with somebody else, so they will. But they also like to congregate, and that's not something we'd be encouraging. We also have, over a long number of years, developed a strong sort of multi-sensory environment, which is a high-touch environment. But high-touch exhibits and play areas will not be available immediately. We'll be testing, if you like, stress testing the museum for the number of people that we will receive. We'll have a lot more locals and regional visitors, I think. We'll be doing all the protocols of timed tickets, which is not something we've had before. We'll have all our high contact surfaces being cleaned. Our HVAC systems, like others, will be kind of invisible, but we've added levels of filtration, but also disinfectant foggers, which are used after hours. We'll have floor decals like many places as well, and upholstered occupancy limits. We'll, you know, be encouraging people, when they use an elevator, to use the single issue tissues that we provide. We'll be opening a lot of doors that would normally have been closed. We'll have hand sanitizers all over the place, and all sorts of practical demonstrations of people's safety.
So Brian, in listening to that, I mean, there's so much in what you have to do just for that piece of it. And when I was looking at the guidance for museums today, one of the things that really struck me is, okay, the food dimension has to comply with the restaurant guidance. The gift shop has to comply with retail guidance. So there are so many layers of safety precautions and guidance. Is that a manageable burden for a nonprofit institution like your museum? And how do you manage that?
Well, we sort of regard it as just there's no choice. And we've had 3 months just unprecedented of staying closed, which is just not something we do. And it's time to get back to doing what we do best, which is providing in-person encounters. So we just have to do everything that we have to do. It's a stretch for staff, and for that reason, we've decided to open for the first 4 weeks, for 4 days a week only, so Thursday through Sundays. And that will give us the Tuesdays and Wednesdays we're normally closed on Mondays, to try to make sure that we're getting all our training and protocols correct, and sanitation will continue throughout the week. But just the stress, if you like, will be relieved a little bit. And then we'll go back, I imagine, to our full schedule, having learned so much in the early weeks. It's a learn as you go, but that's what museums do. We're very creative places.
Brian, we only have a little bit of time left with you. There are a couple more questions I want to get to. A couple of weeks ago, the museum announced 15% of its staff across all departments were being laid off immediately, and all staff making over $110,000 have taken pay reductions. Are there more cuts coming? Is the museum in sound financial health?
The museum is in sound financial health now. We had to reduce our budget from $36 million last year to $30 million. We've lost that much, and we had to let 15% of staff go. Yeah, that's 38 people, and that was incredibly painful to a team-oriented culture like ourselves. There will not be more cuts envisaged now. We kept everybody sound and in full pay, except for the senior staff taking pay cuts for the entire 3 months, including temporary and part-time.
And the last question: with the greater Boston community has been having conversations for at least a year, if not longer now, about making cultural spaces like museums welcoming to all, especially more racially sensitive and inclusive. What efforts is the Peabody Essex Museum making on that front?
We're working on a strategic plan, which we'll announce in a couple of months, but I'm thrilled that, as a highlight, we will get to reopen an exhibition that we had launched just before we closed on Jacob Lawrence, his series called The American Struggle, because the Metropolitan Museum, where it's going next, is opening later. So we'll get a few more weeks. We'll be developing a plan and are responding to many queries, as you might imagine. The museums have a lot of work to do, and we certainly do at the Peabody Essex Museum. It's been a real wake-up call, I think a pivotal moment for us all in the last few months, but especially in recent weeks. And we intend to respond, but we want to be seen by our actions rather than our words.
And that's Brian Kennedy, the Rose Marie and Ike Van Otterloo Director and CEO of the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, which will reopen to the public on July 18th. Brian, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.